All right, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Joanne DiMaggio as we talk about reincarnation, and we'll be right back with your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Joanne DiMaggio with us as we talk about reincarnation. Joanne, where do people get this new book, Edgar Cayce and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn?
They can get it on Amazon, or they can get it through the publisher, which is Ozark Mountain Publishing.
Simple as that. And how about your website off of that?
Yeah, I'd love for people to visit my website. It's joannedimaggio.com, and it has information on all of my books there, as well as the different types of regressions that I offer. People could book them right online if they are interested in having me do a regression with them via Zoom.
How long do they take?
They're anywhere from an hour and a half to 3 hours, depending on which type of regression you want. And how
that's
much
pretty intense. That's intense.
Yeah, it can be. Mm-hmm.
You know what's interesting about reincarnation is somebody, let's say they drowned in another life, they're petrified of water in this life. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all have phobias, that many of which can be traced back to a previous lifetime. I know I don't like going over bridges. That scares me. when I go to Virginia Beach, there's that real long bridge, and I'm like, oh no, I don't want to do this.
Well, you think it's going to collapse on you?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm afraid that I'm going to end up in the water.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's one of those fears that makes absolutely no sense whatsoever, but it's there. And other people, you know, people have fear of heights or flying or of certain animals or all kinds of phobias that can be traced to a previous life.
Would you say, and I don't want to put the poor guy down, but T.J. Davis, who's in his 80s, that he failed Edgar Cayce's destiny?
I don't think it's a matter of failing. I think that Cayce laid out what was an optimal future for him. Like, this is what he was capable of doing. But because he was giving that reading to a child who had no power over his own destiny at that point, I don't think it would be fair to blame him for that. You know, sure, at any given point in time when he was older, he could have focused more on that. But I think by then there was a lot of damage done, and it just played out the way it did.
Well, this is a remarkable work that's happening. What do the folks at ARE think of this kind of situation?
Well, that's a loaded question because they really were not behind me in my writing this book.
Why?
Because
it wasn't fulfilled?
Answer. I can't get a straight answer, but
I would guess because the guy didn't turn out to be whatever Edgar Cayce predicted he would be.
That was one of the things I heard. You know, there are all kinds of rumors. I think that after Cayce died and he was adrift in his life, I think that you know, they looked upon him as a hippie. He was a source of embarrassment for them, and I think that he developed a reputation when he was young that he never was able to shake. And so there are people that are there still today that, by the mention of his name, they sort of cringe.
Really? This poor guy seems like he was behind the eight ball all along.
He didn't have much...
From childhood
he didn't
on.
Have much support, that's for sure. Yeah.
How old was he when Cayce died?
He was almost nine.
9 years old. Does he remember that?
Oh, yeah, he does. He said he could measure his life in terms of before Cayce died and after Cayce died. And so after Cayce died, everybody was scurrying around. Nobody knew what to do. I mean, his Aunt Gladys was trying to save the readings. They're trying to just hold everything together because Cayce had been the center point of everything, and everything revolved around him. So Gladys couldn't really care for TJ the way she had before. His mother still couldn't handle him. His father was nowhere to be seen, and so his mother just pushed him, you know, from, like I said, from pillar to post. You know, she sent him to one relative for a while and then another, and then she'd hire people to watch him. So he, you know, he did not have a stable home life whatsoever.
Right. Is he a nice guy?
He's a wonderful man, yeah. I think I have felt all along that if I could just get him out there to speak to people, he would make a difference in people's lives. But that hasn't been easy because he's very much of a recluse. And, you know, when we talk, he wants to do, he wants us to have our own little Zoom program and so that he could, you know, reach people. But I don't think that's ever going to happen. Just getting him to come out and talk sometimes was difficult. He would back out at the last minute because he would get scared, you know, and he just, he's so used to being alone on that mountain, living almost like a hermit, that that I think it's to change that pattern now at 84 is not easy to do.
Let's go to the phones. Let's start it off by going to Austin, Texas. Brendan's with us. Hello, Brendan.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Okay, awesome. So I had a question because you had talked about how you go into spirit guides before you come into this world, and you kind of have like a spirit contract mm-hmm. with the people that you work with. And with me in late August, you know, the girl that I'm in love with, her mom had like strangled her and domestic violence, that sort of stuff.
Oh, geez.
And I just wanted your perspective on how parents that come in and really screw up, you know, how that affects them and like what your perspective is with that.
And what were they like in a past life, Joanne? If they're that bad now, they could have been worse before, right?
Well, yeah, there's some sort of a karmic relationship going on there, obviously. We choose our parents. It's not random. So you look at what it is you want to learn in the life that you're coming into and which set of parents will best enable you to learn that. Now, sometimes those lessons are harsh, and it could be that they're flipping. It could be that in the last life, the daughter was the one that was aggressive toward.
That could be.
And maybe the parents were the children. So it's balancing out that way. They're learning lessons. Also, sometimes things happen to us, and they're meant to be for the benefit of others around us who are watching this unfold, watching how are we handling this, what is it doing to us, you know, in terms of how are we processing that information. So so she chose that set of parents. She had a reason for choosing it before coming into life. So on a soul level, she sort of knew what she signed up for. She knew what she was going to get into. And how she responded to that or however it played out would be part of that karmic relationship between them, the karmic contract playing itself out.
Let's go to Jeremy in North Dakota. Welcome to the show. Hi, Jeremy.
Hello. How you doing, George?
Good, Jeremy. How you feeling? You feeling okay?
I'm feeling okay. I'm just wondering, is there a reason why I was not allowed to move on? I was sent back to my coma.
He got into a car accident years ago, and then he was in a coma. How long were you in the coma, Jeremy?
I was in the coma for 2.5 months. And
2.5 months.
My car accident was just over 17 years ago.
And you're asking, why did that happen to you?
Yeah, why was I not allowed to move on to my next life and sent back to this?
Oh, meaning why didn't you?
Why did he survive? Yeah.
Well, obviously he had still had some work to do, and he hadn't completed what he set out to do in this life, so he had to come back and finish it up.
Who decides that?
You decide on a soul level.
I mean, are there spirit guides that say you go back, you stay?
Well, that's more like a near-death experience sort of decision. I mean, it's like, and I think that people that have near-death experiences, when I did my Life Between Life research, it's basically the same thing, you know. But I didn't have anybody that had, you know, went into a coma and then came back again. So that's sort of new territory for me. But the simplest answer is just that he hadn't finished whatever he had set out to do. And that coma was part of it, obviously. So however that affected him or others around him was part of the pre-planning for that life.
All right, Jeremy, you're here to stay, my friend. Let's go to Chuck in Florida. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning, George, and how you doing, Joanne?
Good morning.
I'm glad to be able to get through.
Thank you.
Listen, this is kind of a complex thing. I hope I get the question to you right so that you, it makes sense. You know, I have this sort of deep inner sense that there has never been a beginning, and there isn't going to be an end, and that I'm not sure where I play in that, but it's like I can sense things that happened thousands of years ago, and, you know, as I just hear about something, it's like I've been there. And it's just, you know, I ponder it, and I'm not going to say it drives me crazy, but I'm going to say that, you know, I think about it a lot, you know, like, where am I? What is going on? How come I don't have a sense of a beginning or an end, if that makes sense?
You mean for your soul, there was no beginning and no end? Because there isn't. So you're right.
Well, you know, but I really feel it, and I don't know what to make of it or what to do with it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I know when I was growing up, I had similar feelings. I grew up in Chicago, and I thought, where the heck am I? Who are you people? I knew that wasn't home.
Did you feel lost?
Yeah, I felt like I didn't belong there. I just, there was something unsettling about it. And it wasn't until I came to Virginia that I realized I was supposed to be here. This is where my soul is directing me. You know, we've been around for thousands and thousands of years, and so I think that it's a gift when you can actually remember it's something that happened 1,000 years ago like it was yesterday. Those are memory triggers. Whoops, what happened?
He must have hung up, but that's okay.
Oh. Okay.
He's listening. Go ahead.
I was thinking that those are memory triggers that were given before we come to the earth. And memory triggers are like deja vu experiences or a piece of music or colors or flowers or anything like that, so that when you see them in your current life, it reminds you on a soul level of a prior lifetime. And that's to help you to remember that life and remember the people that were in that life with you, to help identify them. So that's very normal to do, actually. And that's one of the questions I asked in my Life Between Life session is, you know, what sort of memory triggers were you given? For me, it was anything about the 18th century. I mean, growing up, that's all I just loved it. I couldn't get enough of it. And that's because later on I found out that I had a life in the 18th century. So remembering things that happened thousands of years ago would be the same thing. I've had a few clients who remember being in Atlantis, and that's unusual, but it's as vivid to them as, you know, what happened to them yesterday.
How do we know it's not the imagination creating these things?
Well, then that begs the question, what is the imagination? Where does it come from? And people ask me that. That's the first question they ask when they are concerned that they express when they sign up for a regression. I'm afraid I'm going to make this all up. And so then I say to them, well, that would imply that you spend time thinking up a story and then coming to me and spending a couple hours with me and then paying me for the privilege of listening to your story. And they all laugh and say, oh, no, no, no. And then after they actually go through the regression, they realize that they would never have made up something like that.
What was the letter that T.J. Davis wrote in 1970 that you really, really affected you?
He wrote a letter to Harmon Breaux, who was the author of A Seer Out of Season, The Life of Edgar Cayce. And I really felt that captured TJ's soul. So people that judge him, I wanted this to be the last thing that they read in the book, because I think that it says who he is. It's very profound, it's very deep, and he just talks about love and the light and how we're all connected to each other. It's quite beautifully crafted. So I wanted to include that as the last thing that you read before forming a final judgment about him.
Sounds like he's kind of a sensitive guy.
He is. He's very thoughtful. He reads like a book a day. And, you know, the life that he had, the things that he experienced, his time in Europe, he spent 4 years in Perugia, Italy, went to the university there. And then he retraced Alexander's march, you know, all through that part of the country, from Greece, all the areas that he conquered. He subconsciously recreated that exact route right after he got out of the Marine Corps. He traveled around Europe and met some interesting people, and some of his past lives, especially the Alexander life, came up from time to time. So he's had a remarkable, interesting life. And just, I think, knowing about it in and of itself, I think, helps to fulfill that prophecy that Casey gave.
Let's go to first-time caller Anthony in Port Richey, Florida. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, George. Thank you for taking my call. Great show tonight.
Thank you.
Joanne, I have a question, two questions, actually, and I've always wondered about this, so I'm hoping you can kind of give me some guidance on it. When the Challenger crew and the Columbia crew were killed in their shuttles, mm-hmm. It was through no fault of their own.
Right.
So would you say that those accidents and the people on those shuttles would come back again because it wasn't their time, or was it their time? And when you say spirit guides, are you saying like people like the shuttle crews or someone like Christopher Reeve, who of no fault of their own, would the body goes away, but the spirit stays behind. So when they come back, their spirit guide guides them further. Is that what you mean by that? And then the last question I have is, do we actually see the people we love in this life after they leave come back when we come back again in our next life?
Take that one first, Joanne.
Yeah. The answer is yes. They're part of our soul family. Soul families are a group of souls that incarnate over and over and over and over again together as a group. But we change gender and we change roles. So your father in this life could have been your wife in a previous life. And we all have an agreement. So in this life between life session, they'll come and say, hey, you know what, I'm going to come in with you as your uncle, and I'm going to be there just as a support system for you, because you're going to be going through some rough times, so I'll be there for you. So we meet up with them when we're in the afterlife, and then we have a reunion with those souls, and then we sit with them and we talk about, let's plan the next life. What are we going to be doing together? Who are you going to be? So, you know, you could recognize them just by the essence of their soul. You might, when I do regressions with people, I'll say, is there anybody from the previous life that's in your life now? And I want you to, no, don't look at them for how they look, except for the eyes, because the eyes are the windows to the soul, and those don't change. But the physical body has changed, obviously. But you get a sense of them. You know, you feel that you know them already, that they feel familiar to you. So that's, again, a memory clue.
And we'll talk about the spirit guide question when we come back and take final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, David Horowitz joins us to talk about his work, Dark Agenda. And then later on, we're going to talk about miracles here on Coast to Coast. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our final segment with Joanne DiMaggio, latest book, Edgar Casey and the Unfulfilled Destiny of Thomas Jefferson Reborn. It just didn't happen for him. And, of course, her website is her name, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. The spirit guides, how influential are they in the reincarnation process, Joanne?
They work with you while you are in the afterlife, and you might say that they're the equivalent of guidance counselors at school. So when you work with them, they have like your report card. So all of your lifetimes, what you've accomplished, what you still have to work on, that sort of thing is in front of them. And with you, they can help you decide on which karmic issues you're going to take on with you in the next life. And they'll offer you some advice. You'll work on your soul's mission. so that you can, you know, make a statement like, you know, I'm coming back to teach, to be a teacher, to create music or whatever. I did want to mention when the previous caller had talked about the, you know, the astronauts who had died. I had said earlier that a suicide would come back immediately. If mm-hmm. your life is taken prematurely, if you're killed or like in a war,
right. or any kind of tragedy, a car accident, whatever.
You can also come back quickly, too. But many of those people, if they come in deliberately to go through something like that, they're usually pretty highly evolved souls, and they're coming into so that their life would be a model to other people. So especially people like that that were in a high visibility situation where people, you know, it would trigger in other people, emotions and ideals and, you know, whatever, because of their death, so that it serves as a trigger for them as well. So it's a multi-layered purpose to that lifetime, which, you know, may end tragically early, but it sets off a series of events then that enable us to learn.
Let's go to Joe in Boston, Massachusetts, on the wild card line. And Joe, Tom tells me it's your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Joanne. Joanne, I'm visually impaired. I come, so maybe Tom could take my email off and you could write to me. I can't do it by Zoom because I don't have a camera. If we ever did a, and you're not too expensive, a session, I have to be there in person. But I have a couple questions. How can you choose your parents and people like me that have had rough and abusive treatment and they're having trouble today with the doctors? I may have to have a procedure. They won't let me tape record it to protect myself. All sorts of medical things happen in people's lives and mistakes, you know, they cover up. How can we choose our parents? I don't think I chose my parents. I'm sure they're sorry for what they did. That's the first thing I want, and I wanted to ask you one other question after.
Okay. People are usually very surprised when I say to them, you know, you chose your parents, and they say, well, I would never have chosen them. But you've got to step back a little bit and take a look at what did you learn from your mother and your father that you would not have learned if you had another mother or father. So even though the lesson may appear to be harsh, you did nonetheless learn something from it. You chose to be in whatever socioeconomic situation that they brought to you. So you knew coming in with them, you knew what race you'd be, you knew what country you would be living in, what neighborhood you would be living in. So there was a lot of factors involved in that. And sometimes the lessons do appear to be very harsh. As a matter of fact, most of my clients will say that their parents, you know, it was a problematic relationship. But nonetheless, I'll say, did you learn from them what you set out to learn? And they, to a T, I'll say yes. So there is a purpose in it and a reason for it, even though when we're in the middle of it, it certainly doesn't feel that way.
Smartest thing I ever did in reincarnation, Joanne, was pick my parents. I'll tell you that.
Well, that's great.
Joe, you had a second question. Go ahead.
Yeah, but I just wanted to say I did not choose physical abuse and years of abuse. My other question is, when you do a Zoom in person and you could contact me, we'll give my email to Tom, or not Zoom because I don't use Zoom. If I ever got down there, maybe we could make arrangements for hypnotherapy. I know that hypnotherapy does help. They have done it in England in operating rooms. Mm-hmm. That's more advanced than they do here in the hypnosurgery, and I've got a video about that. I'd just like your take on that.
Well, I had an office, but with COVID hit, I closed my office, and now I'm working from home, and I'm doing all of my sessions on Zoom. And actually, I find that they're actually better on Zoom than in person. Perhaps not for your particular situation, but for other people, because they're a lot more comfortable in their own homes when we go through the relaxation process before going into the regression. So, I don't do them in person at all anymore.
First-time caller Cheryl in Syracuse, New York. Hi, Cheryl.
Well, hi, you guys. This is so amazingly cool. I was totally meant to talk to you. I've called a million times.
Perfect. You got through.
Yes.
All righty.
I have a question. years ago, a medium told me that I was someone else in another life, which I thought was insane. And then I realized when I thought back, ever since I was 9 years old, I had been drawn to Native American history, mm-hmm. and even ended up working in a work project for 20 years on it. So I was wondering if either one of you had any insight on this.
That you had a Native American life, prior lifetime?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because the things that we're drawn to, when there's no logical reason for us to be drawn to it, are often part of those memory triggers I talked about earlier that are that will give us hints and clues about a prior lifetime that we had. So, like I said, for me, it was 18th century. When I go to Williamsburg, it's like stepping into another time period over there, and I am just happy as a clam. Growing up, I couldn't get enough of that reading material on people of that time period, the music I love, the architecture, the costuming. So, I've had a Native American lifetime as well, and I'm drawn to that quite a bit. Matter of fact, I've got a portrait in my office of a beautiful Native American woman with a fawn. And I would be surprised if you did not have a Native American life based on what you've told me.
And Joanne, when the show's over, just stay on hold because we'll get you Joe in Boston's email, okay?
Okay, sure.
We'll get it to you. David in San Jose, California is with us. Hi, Dave. Thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Well, good evening, Joanne. Hi, George. How
Hi,
you doing?
Davey. Good. Hi. Thank you.
I have a question. Today I was driving on this road, Monterey Road in San Jose, California, and there's an awesome, beautiful family, last name DiMaggio, and I heard a voice saying, it's been a while, so I went in and had a slice of pizza that DiMaggio family owned and so forth. And coming to find out, it's a relative of DiMaggio, the baseball player. And so I was leaving. After I left the place, I heard a voice saying, you'll be talking about me today. And I said, well, who's talking to me? And I'm just like saying, is this coming from the back of the seat of my car? And then so I'm driving quite ways down, and then all of a sudden, something says Valentino, and I said, Valentino, well, that's my last name. And then I heard a voice also telling me, you will have something to talk about Valentino. I said, well, how is that? So right, like about an hour ago before the show, I look in the internet, and there it is, like they're talking, something flashes right in front of me, and it says something about Valentino, and I said, well, this is very mysterious that this is appearing onto me, and they're talking about Valentino, and so I didn't know, and I feel that these people that at one time were here and they reincarnate, I believe that their spirits visit us, and they want us to share something or say something, and we are their messengers. Could that be? It's very mysterious how we hear voices. And as of this morning also, I heard a voice saying, you will talk about people that once were here, and you will be someone that will echo this or repeat this again, and you will talk about these people that once were here, and you will continue. And Rudolph Valentino,
Are you related to him? Were you related to the actor?
My grandmother was Josefina Elena Valentino, and she was from Castellana, Palermo. George, I'm going to say something. Years ago, a friend of mine, a casting director, Tony Toronto, that was in Hollywood, said, you look like him, and we're going to have the 80th anniversary, and you're invited to this. And you're gonna, you know, I want you to speak in behalf of the family. I said, well, I don't really know if I'm really related to him or not. He goes, you are. You have the split image of him. I said, no, this can't be. And then he said, no, you got to show up to this. And George, you know, Joanne, I don't know. I was like speechless, and I showed up to the Hollywood Forever, and there is, you know, Tony standing there saying, well, we've been waiting for you, and they have a program, and they said, in behalf of the family, David Valentino, like, in behalf of the family, I says, why is this happening? Is it, why am I being drawn to this? And he says, because you're related to him, you don't know.
Well, you probably are. There aren't a lot of Valentinos out there, and you're talking to another DiMaggio. You had a DiMaggio encounter with a family. So are you related to the baseball player by any chance, Joanne?
Well, George, I was wondering when you were going to ask me that. Oh, yeah, I am, and you should have seen my Aunt Marilyn. No, I'm not.
You're not. Well, there's not a lot of DiMaggios out there, are there?
I don't know. I've never really looked for them.
Well, back to David's thing about synchronicity. How does all that stuff happen?
Well, at first I thought maybe he had a really strong connection to his spirit guide who was whispering to him, because I've had that happen to me. So I wasn't quite sure if that was the situation or if he was talking about being the reincarnation of Rudolph Valentino, or if, you know, he's simply a member of that family and he bears the, you know, genetic makeup of him. Very seldom, by the way, do people reincarnate in the same biological family that they had before.
Really?
So,
okay,
yeah,
so it's totally different.
Yeah, usually it doesn't happen. It can happen. I'm not saying it's always, but it's rare. So I'm not, I think you'd be a great subject for a regression, because that's where you'll get the answer.
Let's get to Sharon in Massachusetts. Get you in here. Sharon, go ahead.
Well, thank you. As she was talking, I have such a closeness to animals. It's like my happiness is being with animals, and it's not with people. My happiness is basically being with animals. And right now I've got about 10 I'm taking care of.
Wow.
And this one little pet, you know, I'm so close to her. It's such a strange, close relationship that I just wondered if with pets, do we ever, like, were we with a pet in a past life, or was that pet a person in our past life? When you have a extremely unique closeness to one particular pet.
Can you end up as a human into an animal in reincarnation?
No.
You can't do that.
No, that's transmigration.
Do animals reincarnate to other animals?
They have a soul group unto themselves, so they remain in the animal kingdom.
But we don't cross over.
No, and they do come back with us multiple times. So if you ever saw a little dog or a little cat and you just, you know, there's just something about them that was familiar to you, or they acted the way your previous pet acted. You know, those are pretty much signs that they had been with you. When my little dog passed, I said to her, you come and find me again. And she unfortunately hasn't done that, but I've heard many, many people who say that the animals that they have are the reincarnation of previous pets.
And what's your latest projects? What are you working on now?
I'm actually working on a book about the Beatles and spirituality, because best kept secret about me was that I was president of the Beatles fan club when I was a teenager, and I kept all my newsletters. So I'm going through the newsletters to see if there's any hint from the fans' perspective if the Beatles planted the seed of spirituality in us at that age, that, and then 20, 30 years later, it blossomed. So for those of us that have a career in esoteric studies, who were Beatle fans, did it start back then?
Fascinating. Joanne, thanks for being on the program. We'll get you the phone number for Joe in Boston, the email address as well. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Lottasaur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Boros, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.